All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Hot Dogs and Caviar. Tarver King is off in London having the best time ever, apparently. He sent Nate and I approximately 390 photographs of amazing food that he's having all over the UK. So the next chance we get, we'll get him in here for a personal account of exactly what he's been doing. He had dinner at Heston Blumenthal's. He's going to a caviar bar. He's going to Scotland to drink whiskey. So basically, fuck that guy is what I'm saying.
We're insanely jealous and insanely happy for him, and we can't wait to hear about it.
You may be happy for him, but I'm bitter and spiteful. He can eat a dick. Nah, man, these pictures he was sending
probably
us. Like,
he'll probably do it with all the foie gras he's been eating on it.
he might eat a spotted dick.
That's a British cuisine joke.
Ayo. Tarver is having the world's best time. Whereas Nate and I are languishing in corona-ravaged Charleston, South Carolina. Also, just to be topical, I'd just like to say, screw the NFL. The overtime rules are terrible. Nate's wearing his Bills sweatshirt right now, and the Bills deserve to at least touch the ball in OT.
Yeah, they could have played defense, though.
They could have, or they could
play. They got to stop them, too, you know.
Or they could play a sport with fair rules. NFL sucks. Baseball is just better. It's just better.
Nothing's fair.
Nothing's fair.
They had a chance. Defense matters just as much as offense does. They should have tried to stop them.
Nothing's fair, but nothing's quite as unfair as the NFL overtime rules. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, they tweaked them a few years ago. It used to be sudden death. Now they got to at least score a touchdown.
All I'm saying is Mahomes is a phenom. He can win a coin toss like it's nothing. And apparently that's the skill that matters.
Yep. Apparently winning a coin toss is more important than being able to throw a laser beam from a pocket with huge men trying to kill you.
Regrettably, he can do that too.
Yeah, you can do that too.
I'm not saying, and the thing is, I'm not saying the Chiefs aren't awesome. I'm not saying the Chiefs didn't deserve it. I'm saying the Bills deserve to lay a hand on the ball in OT. And until the NFL fixes that, I'm done respecting them as a sport.
Hey, fair enough, man. I would have loved to have them have the ball first. I'll tell you that, but.
Or at all, you know, just for a second.
That was a barn burner, man.
They should do either the NCAA, like play the whole quarter out, or at least give everyone a possession.
That's what they do in college. Each team gets a possession and then they alternate. And then the first team to fail loses.
Yeah.
After the first two possessions.
That is a way better rule. And I know it probably all comes down to TV money, but you know, Lord knows corporate profits being more important than the integrity of the game. Well, you know, I guess that's America. It's the same reason
that is definitely America.
It's the same reason
everyone needs to bow down to their corporate master.
Except us, because we don't make any money at all. Hot Dogs and Caviar is a not-for-profit / not stand a chance of making any profit. I mean, we'd love to be for profit.
That's true.
I'm not saying we're filing our taxes as a not-for-profit. I'm saying we don't have to pay taxes. Because as yet, we're not for profit.
We're definitely in the red.
Yeah. Although not that deep in the red, because
this is fun.
As you all have probably ascertained, our budget is almost nothing. All right. Well, speaking of indignation, we got two little mini topics for you today. Later on, Nate and I are going to talk about chili. You know, tis the season. It's only chilly weather in Charleston for like 3 weeks out of the year. So we got to get while it's good. But before we talk about chili, I want to take my indignation over the Bills finish last night. And I'm not a Bills fan. I just like sports and I hate it when they suck.
Yeah, Jesse's mad they ruined the ending to the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
and it did suck. The ending sucked. It did.
Like, the last act was amazing. It would be like if, like, at the end of Aliens, Ripley's like, yeah, we got out of there. We're cool. And then she got back to the spaceship, and it turned out that the alien was there, too. And they flipped a coin, and the alien won the coin toss, ripped her head off, and put her out the airlock. That's the ending of Aliens, as per last night's game. God damn it.
You were so close to being awesome.
Right. But yeah, sorry. The alien won the coin toss. The alien wins. I don't know what to tell you. Fair's fair. All right. So anyway, we were talking about, times where we were annoyed at our bosses in the kitchen. Now all of you stop drooling. I'm not going to talk crap about Nate. I could, and I have in the past, but it's always been kind of good fun, specifically the grapefruit cells.
He got over it.
I got over it. And then I made my own sous chef do a bunch, and then I forgot to put him on the plate, and he wanted to kill me. And I was like, it's the circle of life. But no, I was thinking about a time when I got really upset with my chef. And this is a long time ago, and I won't say the restaurant. It was in New Orleans, and I didn't have a good time there. If you know me, you know what I'm talking about. And this is an example of old school chef wisdom versus new school chef wisdom. Now, when I say old school wisdom, I mean the truisms that they beat into your head. And one of those truisms is never throw anything away. Never throw anything away. Now, if you've listened to this at all, you know Nate and I are not about that. Like, if you peel your carrots, you throw your carrot peels away. We both hate seeing the stock bucket. Nate, you know what I'm talking about?
Yep. Yeah, the stock pot is not a garbage pail. If you got doo-doo carrots, it's going to make doo-doo carrot soup.
Right. Like, I've worked at places where
some things need to go in the garbage.
People peeled carrots and were peeling the carrots into the stock bucket so they could use the carrot peels in their stock. Thomas Keller and other chefs that studied with him peel their carrots and then put those carrots in the stock and throw the peels away. My sous chef once asked me, do you really have to peel the carrots for the stock? And I said, no, carrots are pretty clean. Like, unless, I mean, if you dug the carrots yourself, yeah, peel them. But if it's just regular orange carrots from the store or from the Sysco truck, you don't need to peel them to go in stock. You really don't. It doesn't make a difference. You won't be able to tell. But I peel the carrots for stock because it lets everyone see me doing it. And then they know that they don't put carrot peels in a stock bucket. Like, it's a symbol. It says, I don't put garbage in my stock. Now, there are some times where, like, in the case of garlic, peeling garlic for stock is just not worth it. And in the case of onions, onion skin actually kind of can
is awesome in stock.
It can lend a nice golden color to stock if that's what you want. Not if you don't.
A lot of beautiful coppery undertones.
And it doesn't hurt it at all.
It doesn't hurt it at all. Nothing.
But like if you walk into a restaurant, you look in their stock pot and it's all carrot peels, mushroom stems, and like the gritty butts of the celery and like just onion peels with no actual onions, that's garbage stock. And we hate garbage stock.
Or you're prepping and the stock's already going and it's already cooked. And then a prep cook will come by and dump a bag of onion scraps in your stock that's done. Yeah. That's not a garbage can.
Yeah. Using the stock as a garbage can is a classic example of the mentality that I'm talking about. And I get where it's coming from. Young cooks.
Yes, I do too.
Young cooks can be kind of wasteful. And it's also good to train your people if you don't know whether it can be reused or not. Don't throw it away. Like if you're cleaning a halibut and somebody needs to make fish stock, save the skeleton. Halibut skeletons make the best fish stock. And if your line cook doesn't understand that and tosses the skeleton and you're like, well, I needed fish stock and now I can't make it, what's the matter with you? Or lobster shells are a great example of something that, while it seems to a rookie like it's garbage.
Yeah.
Pros
know. We're not talking about being blatant about it.
Yeah, pros know that the shell is the best part of the lobster. Like lobster is just lobster, but lobster shells can make lobster consomme or sauce americaine. Good stuff. Way better than lobster meat.
Yeah, we're not advocates of waste just for the sake of waste and, you know, just the supreme and the best part of everything. Everything is inherently valuable, but it's like
you should be able to.
But if it's waste, it's waste. And it needs to have a purpose and it needs to be used purposefully, not just for the sake of using it. Like that 10 cents of carrot peels isn't going to change anything.
Exactly.
It's not going to add any value or take any value away.
Gentlemen, start your engines. Dos Equis Lager, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, it's my last.
Oh, that would be good in a bowl of chili.
It would be good with a bowl of chili. All right, so I have this anecdote. This anecdote, I was in New Orleans and I was like the PM pastry guy. And at this place was busy. So their batch of cheesecakes made 16 cheesecakes. 16, that's a lot. And each cheesecake was 12 portions. So that's like damn near 100 portions of cheesecake. Now, it was the least popular dessert at this place. So we would sell, I don't know, 10 to 15 a day. So 100 portions is like at least a week, if not 10 days.
A week's worth of cheesecakes, like, yeah.
Now, when you think about 16 cheesecakes and you think of that being gone in a week, wow, that is like a lot of volume. That was the smallest selling dessert. But, you know, it was important. People liked it. People came in for it. You know, every single dessert at this place had fans because the place was very famous. So 86 and something wasn't an option. It was a big deal. But so I was frosting the cheesecakes. Now the cheesecakes came out of the oven a little bit brown on top. So the frosting wasn't even about really providing a new flavor. It was just about shining them up. So it was just sour cream and powdered sugar whisked together. And powdered sugar has a little starch element to it. So if you make an icing with it, then after a little while, the icing will set up. Like, you notice how buttercream mm-hmm. on a cake will get a little rigid over time. You know, it'll make like a nice smooth sort of layer.
This like was, on Christmas cookies.
Exactly. Like royal icing sets up hard, like glass, almost hard, like candy. Mm-hmm. So I took, you know, and I looked at the 16 cheesecakes and just eyeballed, because there wasn't a recipe. It was just like sweeten sour cream with powdered sugar until it's this texture.
Yeah, you take a 3-pound tub of, you know, cream cheese and a box of powdered sugar and go from there.
It wasn't even that. It was like, you know, a couple of scoops. A 3-pound tub would have made too much because it's only 16 cakes and they just needed a little glaze across the top.
You didn't do all the sides and everything?
No, just the top. The sides had breadcrumb.
Just the graham
cracker crust. So yeah, that's a lot. So you had to eyeball
it. I'm thinking of birthday cakes.
Right, no. So I made my little, you know, maybe a quart and a half total of a heavy quart of frosting.
I gotcha.
And I frosted all 16 cheesecakes. Now remember, this is the next cheesecakes are going to come out in like at least a week, maybe 10 days. Now I was pretty proud of my bowl. I looked at my bowl that had the frosting in it, and it just had a little like a glazing of frosting. There wasn't enough to frost another cake. So I eyeballed close enough that I needed 16 cheesecakes worth, and I made 16 and maybe 16 and a third cheesecakes worth. There was about 2 ounces of icing left over. I think that's pretty damn good. So I was headed for the dish pit with my bowl and spatula, and the chef sees me. He goes, hey, what are you doing? No. Like, I'm a dog. I'm like, what? I had no idea what he was getting at. And he goes, no, you save that. You save that. You don't throw stuff away in this kitchen. And I'm thinking to myself, okay. And he goes and makes a big show, all huffy, goes and makes a big show of getting a ramekin, a 2-ounce ramekin. Like, you know, the things like that you get ketchup in when you get a burger and fries at like TGI Fridays, one of those scrapes and scrapes and scrapes and fills the ramekin and then gets plastic wrap and labels it cheesecake frosting and hands it to me and says, use this next time. And then walks away like he's some badass and he's made this big point. And at the time I'm thinking, okay, so you want me to take this 2 ounces of sour cream and powdered sugar with a market value of, I'm going to be charitable and say 75 cents. And you want me to wait a week to 10 days until this is a week to 10 day old sour cream and powdered sugar, and then mix it into the fresh icing that I make for the next batch of cheesecakes. And then that's going to sit for another week to 10 days. So at the end of this time, there's going to be 3-week-old icing on cheesecakes. And that's what you want instead of me throwing away 75 cents worth of product that has no other utility. Like, that's not enough to build a special around. Like, if I had 3 quarts of pastry cream, but I accidentally made too much pastry cream for a special, and I had to use it for something, I would build a dessert around pastry cream and run it as a special for 2 days to get rid of it. But there's not much. What can you do with 2 ounces of sweet and sour cream? Like, at some point, the economic value of the sweet and sour cream as loss is a lot less than the economic value of the energy that you would have to put into correctly utilizing it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, absolutely. 100%. I mean, there's a fine line. Every kitchen has different rules and different priorities. Like, to me, that 2 ounces of sour cream being in the way in the refrigerator at a busy restaurant for the next 10 days would be way more annoying to even deal with. And why is this on the shelf? What is this doing here? What the hell are we going to do with this?
Exactly. Who thought this was a good idea to save?
I'm also the guy who thinks, like, cut the top off of that mayonnaise jar and get every little ounce out of it, because you will use 2 ounces of mayonnaise in the next 15 hours.
It's all about judicious use of leftover products. Mayonnaise, you can get some more into a 9-pan. You will
scoop
use
that
it.
Extra drop of mustard out of the thing. Yeah, we'll use it. The ketchup, yes.
But a little bit of prepped icing.
Yeah, if there's no outlet for it, or if there's no intrinsic value, or it's just going to go bad.
Or if you would take, if it would take you more than 75 cents worth of labor to figure out what to do with the 75 cents worth of product, then you cut your losses. It's an acceptable loss. Like, for me, think about tossing the water.
I got something real quick. So think of how many times as the chef where you said, you're hemming and hawing over saving something. You're like, okay, maybe we can do something. And then 5 days later, you just decide to pitch it because there's just no time to make it, no way to outlet. There's no way to utilize it. And you just end up throwing it away 5 days from later.
Yeah, exactly.
So many times.
Or like, think about this.
So you try to save it. You try to have an outlet for it, but it needs to have purpose.
It needs to have potential purpose. It needs to have some economic value. Sometimes, you know, you swing and miss, but other times you're like, I don't know who saved this. I think they're insane. Like a great example, think about cleaning the walk-in. You toss the walk-in. What are you doing really when you toss the walk-in? You're throwing stuff away. So like,
you're looking for doo-doo. You're looking for idiots who wrapped a 9-pan with a freaking a gram of something in the pan.
Like, right. Why? Like, you're like, this is a waste of space. It's a waste of a container, and it's a waste of time that I'm throwing this away right now. Think about clean as you go. When you toss the walk-in, throwing away is cleaning. So throwing away as you go is not a bad thing. I always told my line cooks,
you gotta consolidate. Restaurants are tight, man.
Yeah, like space.
Almost every restaurant I've ever worked in is 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag.
Space is money.
You gotta be organized. Yeah.
Space is money. Containers
are
money.
More valuable than that 75 cents of sour or cream cheese. I'll tell you that.
It was sour cream. I was just like, what do you. It was so utterly pointless. So insulting. Like, I'm 29 years old. I've been in the business since I was 18. You have never looked at my resume. You have no idea what I know. And you're handling up on me because you have this like dogmatic idea that throwing anything away is bad, but I have an idea that keeping this is worse. And you know what I did? I wrapped it. I threw it in.
Yep. You shut your mouth and you did your job.
I threw it on the random shelf. And then a week and a half later, when no one was looking, I threw it away.
Yep.
Because I didn't want to
have that kind of culture. You sneak and you hide shit and you're not up front and you lie because you don't want to get in trouble.
This was the same place where if the chef saw a food that was substandard, he would scream at you. So the fastest way,
feel like shit.
The fastest way to get substandard food out of your life was to get it under a cloche and into the dining room.
Yep. You hide it.
You just get it out there and someone's
going to
eat it.
You hope you don't get caught.
Yeah, and it was just like, I would never want to be the chef that was so angry, so boisterous, blustery, boisterous is the wrong word, so blustery and mean that my cooks were afraid to admit mistakes, because if a cook makes a mistake and they can get it under a cloche and into the dining room, then that's the worst case scenario, because then it's gone to a customer. It would always be like, oh, don't let chef see that, just get it out of here, runner, go, go, go. And that's not cool at all. That's the ultimate lose. And if you're a chef,
Those lessons are a lot of lessons that you and I learned, and to become the anti-jerks and be pro, pro advocate and pro confidence and things like that. And guess what? It's a lot fucking harder being a chef that way. And it is not the easiest way, but we think it's the best way because in the end, you got cooks, people cooking with confidence and not afraid to make a mistake. And if they do, we just ask you, tell on yourself and we'll fix it. And we're not going to make a big deal about it.
If you make a mistake, immediately call the chef over. And if the chef,
let's fix it.
Yeah,
we'll talk about it later.
Like, this doesn't look right. What do I do? And if you have a chef that's barking at you because you did something wrong, next time you're not going to say, "Hey, come over, let's fix
this." You're not going to say nothing.
Yeah, like training your cooks not to call, not to ask for help when something doesn't look right is the worst thing a chef can do. The single worst.
100%.
I remember one time where we were at Tristan. And little Amy Whiteside, you had tasted through her station, and she tasted her crab meat after you, and she was terrified to tell you that she didn't think it was that great. And she's like, I'm concerned. I was like, why? She's like, because the crab meat's, I don't think it's good. And I was like, well, then tell Nate. She's like, he already tasted it. I was like, okay, well, maybe he was going fast. Maybe he missed it. And she's like, I was like, Nate, come here. And I called you over, and she wanted to evaporate. She was so scared. I don't know what some other chef did to her. And you tasted it.
She
and you
wanted were like, to die.
And you tasted it. You were like, you know, you're not wrong. Go ahead and make fresh. And she was like, chef, I'm sorry. And you said, and I quote, never apologize for having standards. And that was important because it empowered her.
Awesome.
It let her. Do you remember saying that?
No, I don't. You said that. I loved her. She you was so that. Afraid.
She was terrified. But yeah, you let her know that, like, just because you thought it was good enough, the fact that she didn't think it was good enough, you were proud of her. You thought it was a good thing. And that was a huge moment. That was a huge moment because obviously you
tasted. That was a good moment. Yeah.
When you taste a station, you taste 30 things in a minute. And like, you don't have time to really get into it. So like,
oh, yeah.
you're looking for stuff that's obviously wrong, where she just found something she didn't, that she just thought could have been better. And she tasted.
She wasn't that proud of it.
No. And like, if you have something on your station that you're not proud of,
yeah,
and the chef said it was okay. I mean, honestly, speaking as a line cook, make a decision. How hard is it to make? Like, there have been times where I'm like, man, he said it was okay. I am not dealing with this now. But like, but in this case, it was something that it would have taken her. It was like a 10-minute fix, and she could feel proud of something that she didn't feel proud of before. And you know, like, we're not perfect. Chefs aren't perfect. Chefs blink.
No.
Chefs look over stuff and like. I mean, shit, a lot of us aren't even that good. But like, you know, if like we rely on our line cooks to help us find the stuff that's problematic, the good ones.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Chefs
absolutely.
That come down on
just
people.
Make new. We were always big on make new mistakes.
Right.
New mistakes are fine. Like when you keep doing the new thing, the same thing over and over, that's a big problem.
Exactly.
And if it fit in a ninth pan and it was like less than $20 a pound, if it wasn't like foie gras or something really expensive, you never had to ask. You could throw it out. If you didn't think it was good enough, you could pitch it. No questions asked.
I always told my line cooks, never be afraid to throw away garbage. It's such.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I really want that old school wisdom to die. Like, and then there's a corollary to that old school wisdom. And that is everything must be utilized. Like, yeah, it's a nice ideal that everything must be utilized. But
if
you,
it is a great ideal.
But if you're a single outlet, it's just not realistic. Like, you know, if you're
don't want to serve people your garbage either.
It, like, for instance,
like
if
old shitty asparagus stems are going to make old shitty asparagus soup.
Exactly. But I'm not even talking about old. I'm just talking about the ethics of the ethos of total utilization. Like in a big hotel that has a cafeteria for the employees and a dining room and a cafe and a fine dining restaurant, you can usually find ways to cross utilize stuff. But if you're a single unit restaurant, it's really hard to use all of everything. So let's, for instance, say fish bones. Well, why don't you take all those fish bones and make a fish fumet? Because there's nothing on the menu that needs a fish fumet. And if you find yourself building your menu around utilizing your scraps, you're not building your menu around what your guests want. there's a certain amount of crossover that you can do, but no setup is perfect. You're never going to perfectly use everything if you're a single outlet. And so like the idea that like, for instance, if you're separating your eggs to make hollandaise and you create all these egg whites, well, what are we going to do with those egg whites? I don't know, put a souffle on the menu, but that's a whole logistical quagmire. Putting a souffle on the menu is a lot more difficult than throwing away your egg whites in terms of like money lost. Like it's going to cost you, you're going to need one cook just for the souffle, and you're only going to make so much money with the souffles. They're only going to sell so many. Is the cook you're hiring to work your souffle station worth throwing away a couple bucks worth of egg whites every day? Or do you just eat the egg whites, make your hollandaise and move on?
Yeah.
It's important. I mean,
there's always going to be ways to utilize stuff, and I'm sure you could think of a lot of other ways to utilize it. But, you know, at the end of the day, like you're putting more effort into something that isn't even worth all that much money, like fish bones. Like, yeah, fish fumet is great, but there's no outlet for it. Well, let's just make fish stock anyways and freeze it and keep it around. No, dude, frozen fish stock sucks.
Fast forward to having like 40 gallons of frozen fish stock taking up half your walk-in.
And then you're going to spend all this time making it, and it's going to be flat and dead and insipid in 2 days, even if you freeze it.
Like, and you're paying to keep it frozen. Keeping things frozen costs money. Your freezer is only so big.
And taking up real estate.
If you have a freezer that's the size of a tractor trailer bed, so that you can keep all your leftover stuff frozen, you're paying a lot of money to keep all that stuff frozen. Sometimes you just have to eat loss. And chefs that live on proverbs instead of living on wisdom are, luckily they're a dying breed. I feel like cooks are getting a lot smarter. Chefs are getting a lot smarter. Everyone's learning to get past these like proverbs that are drummed into your head when you're young. But it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, and then somebody once told me too, like when I was working at a place, the chef came by. He wouldn't even let us use a garbage can. We had to keep every scrap, every little piece on our station in a 4-quart Cambro or 8-quart Cambro, and he'd come by and check it, and we can use this, we can use that. You didn't cut enough of this or this off. And I'm like, okay, that's how we did it. So, you know, you adapt but there's a fine line between profits and greed, you know? Like, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah, like, and the thing is, you got to remember, anybody that sits in your dining room might be in the game, more and more especially. Like, it used to be that, you know, cook was very much a blue-collar job, and they wouldn't ever eat the food that they were talking about. But nowadays, with people that are chefs wanting to learn by dining too, restaurants are full of restaurant people. Like, part of restaurant culture is going to restaurants. And if you serve scraps and garbage to a couple of cooks at a table, they will know and they will tell everyone. If you've listened to any, we've probably heard it on this podcast.
Rillettes.
Yeah, the rabbit rillette that tasted just like Thanksgiving turkey. You got to remember, anyone in your dining room might be a critic. But worse, anyone in your dining room might be a fucking cook.
Yeah.
And they will,
you know,
they will roast you, and they will tell everyone they know.
Yes, they will. And it's great to save all your bread scraps and all the stale bread and make your own breadcrumbs, but there's only so much breadcrumb you need. Like, eventually, chef, we have like 222 quarts of breadcrumbs that's going to last us a month. You still want me to save bread scraps? No, get rid of them.
Or keep saving them, but 86 the oldest
do
ones.
Do something with them.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
Toss the oldest ones. Like, saving stuff. The worst offender is vegetable stock. Like, vegetable stock is nigh useless. Like, there are a few examples. Like, where I work right now, they have paella, and they have a vegetable paella. So they make a vegetable stock for the vegetarian paella because it's the only vegetarian entree on the menu. But for the most part, there's very little you can do with vegetable stock. Like, if you're making a butternut squash soup and you make it with water or you make it with vegetable stock, the end yield is exactly the same. So you've actually spent more on the vegetable stock one because you took the time to cook the vegetable stock. That's labor versus water right out of the tap. And root vegetable soups don't need vegetable stock. You just an onion and some root veg, water, butter, cream. That's all you need.
I agree with that 100%. But if you're a chef who feels that you vegetable soups need vegetable stocks, that's great. But don't make it out of your garbage.
Yeah.
You know,
that's also
true. If you're making a nice, beautiful vegetable stock, that's awesome, man. But don't make it out of your garbage. And you got to make it every day. Vegetable stock, like fish stock, it doesn't last. It loses all of its inherent qualities in a matter of 48 hours.
Exactly.
And even if you freeze it.
The real key, what it comes down to, is accounting. When you're doing your cost outs, when you're figuring out how much stuff costs, you take a look at, for instance, a head of fennel. You got a fennel salad. You weigh the fennel, and then you trim the fennel, and then you shave the fennel, and you see how many orders of your fennel salad you got out of your whole fennel bulb. You account for that. And then you make sure that you're charging enough for your fennel salad to cover that cost. You're golden. Doesn't matter if you save things or not. It's all accounted for. If you manage to get some utility out of your fennel branches that come off the fennel bulb, great. But you don't have to. And then once you account like that, then all of a sudden, every decision you're making about what should go on the plate is based on what should go on the plate, not based on the specter of avoiding waste.
Yeah, that's good accounting. And you got to build in little metrics like that into your costing. Like, that's just good accounting practices. But, you know, and if you make a little extra off, you got a bunch of fennel branches and you make a fennel vinegar or pickle the fennel fronds or something,
then great.
That's just gravy.
Yeah, gravy.
Gravy, great. You got the time to do it, do it.
Because the thing is, a chef can talk himself into thinking he's doing a good thing by really saving all the scraps. I won't say where, but Nate and I took over this one place and the previous chef had been valuing filet mignon scrap at the raw price per pound for filet mignon. So the inventory showed something like $700 worth of filet scrap in the walk-in, and we pulled it out and it was all chain and fat and connective tissue. Nothing you can use, not even worth grinding, maybe worth rendering if you wanted to make tallow, if you could do anything with that, which tallow is hard to use. You could fry French fries in it, I guess, but then they're not vegetarian anymore, and that's a whole different problem. So we just chucked it. There was nothing we could do with it. And we told the boss what was going on, and we were like, hey, food cost this month is out the window because this inventory is cooked.
Yeah, I remember that very well. Like, it was like the magic freezer inventory, and we were the new guys, and we were like, sorry, we don't roll like that. We'll tell you the truth, whether it's good or bad or ugly.
Yeah. And I feel like that attitude has, you know, food cost takes a dip, but we're not getting yelled at. We're the ones doing the yelling. Then yeah. I think that that is important. Like,
yeah. We'll always try, but, you know, we're going to try to do the right thing. Even when nobody's looking, we're not going to cook the books. I'm not doing it.
No, it's not us.
Not us. Nope.
All right. Well, on that note, because that's enough ranting about negative shit.
Yeah.
Although that was a fun snark session. But let's get into some practical cooking information. Nate, you had said you wanted to talk about chili, and I'm ready to rock on talking about chili.
Yeah, let's have a little chili hacky sack for basic chili recipes, and, you know, spitball here a little bit. Like, what do you like to do? Like,
well,
I got some tricks. Like, you got any secret ingredients or techniques or
I've got go-to
chilies? All right. Well, how about this? Let's start. Does chili contain beans?
That actually, I was going to start with that in a little bit of a broader sense.
Yeah, go for it.
Because, like, people from Texas get dogmatic about chili.
Oh, yeah.
Some say it never has beans. Some say
most, like the competition guys, if there's beans in it, you're out.
Some say it doesn't have tomatoes.
Yep.
I say the only ingredient that chili must have is right there in the name. Like, think about barbecue. People from the Southeast, like us, well, you're not from the Southeast, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Occasionally you'll get some old person saying, beef's not barbecue. Well, of course it is. If you cook a brisket over wood, it's not barbecue. Like, there's the thing about dogmatism is that certain people get into these attitudes that if you change something about this dish, it's not that dish anymore. You can say it's not Texas chili anymore, but you can't say it's not chili. There's Cincinnati chili. There's upstate New York chili. There's New Mexico chili. There's all sorts of different kinds of chili. It's all chili because what else are you going to call it? I knew a chef who at school, a very good Provençal cuisine instructor. This culinary instructor from Provence said that if you put herbs in it, it's not ratatouille anymore. I ask, what is it then? It's a saute of peppers, squash, eggplant, tomatoes, onions, garlic, shallots. That's ratatouille. If you put herbs in it, it doesn't stop being ratatouille. It's still ratatouille. He's the only person I've ever heard say that. I actually took this to my to Jackie Plutone, the mean guy that I worked for.
Yes.
And he goes, oh yeah, culinary professor. And then he just looked at me and shook some herbs into the ratatouille and goes, oh no, it's not ratatouille no more. What am I going to call it on the menu? What am I going to do?
Yeah, there's so many differences without much distinction. Like, that's the cool thing about food too, is it evolves. And
yeah, like getting dogmatic about stuff is stupid. Like the people that say that if it's got cream in the risotto, it's not risotto anymore. Well, sure it is.
Yeah, it's still risotto. Like people will fight you about it, but like, it's still risotto, dude.
And the thing is, I joke a lot about Italians, but Americans are just as bad. Yeah,
everybody's just as bad.
For instance, I know someone that says the Chicago style pizza isn't pizza.
It's because it's not pizza. It's a casserole. It's a casserole flavored pizza. It's a pizza flavored casserole. Sure.
Oh, you're the worst. Anyway, so yeah, like I have a pretty broad definition of chili. I think that chili is a hot, savory stew consisting of a broth flavored with dried chilies or the powder of dried chili. That's required. Unless it's chili verde, in which case fresh chili is allowed.
Yes.
And you can add proteins, vegetables, or legumes as needed, depending on your style of chili. I feel like chili, like gumbo, is not a single dish. It's a category. It's a formula. And you can change the variables in the formula. That's what matters. That's where I'm at on beans and chili. That's where I'm at on tomatoes and chili. That's where I'm at on green chili versus dry chili. That's where I'm at on chicken versus beef. That's where I'm at on all that. Dogmatism out the window because it prevents communication. At the end of the day, I think that I am more of a student and educator than I am a cook anymore. I'm more concerned about learning and teaching than I am about actually making food. And that kind of dogmatism stops learning and teaching in its tracks. Also, it's really fucking boring.
Yeah, it gets annoying.
And if cooking isn't interesting,
even the history of chili, like so many other foods, it's just argument without end.
Well, I mean,
like, there's just no, like, they trace it back to the 1800s in Mexico, and then this guy in San Antonio, and it's like, dude, like, I mean, who cares?
You want to talk about the origin, the real origin of chili, as far as I've read, is you've got beef jerky, like hardtack, like salt, smoked, dried meat.
Yep.
And you're out on the range, and you just take that and put it in your coffee pot and boil it with a couple of dried chilies and whatever wild herbs you can find to make it suck less. That's chili in its original sense. And so adding ground beef, that's a modern affectation. Adding beef that's not dried, that's a modern affectation. Just like beans, just like tomatoes, just like chicken and fresh chili verde. It's all a modern affectation. I do have one sort of hardline attitude about chili. My one hardline attitude is if you have to add sour cream or cheese, your chili probably kind of sucks.
Yeah, it is awesome in there. Just kind of like cheese on your pizza or cheese on your burger.
Well, cheese on your burger especially, or like many, many compositions of pizza where cheese is integral. But if you absolutely have to have cheese on your burger, or I think a better example is if you absolutely have cheese in your scrambled eggs, then your scrambled eggs suck.
Yeah. Like I agree with that 100%. Yeah, that's a really good take, man.
Like, and I'm not against cheese.
No.
No, I'm just if the chili is flat and pointless until you put dairy fat in it, then you suck at making chili. Really good chili should stand on its own. A one bite with no contrast from the cold sour cream, No extra riches from the cheese. One bite of the chili should knock your socks off. And if it doesn't, go back to the chili drawing board.
But yeah, the garnish shouldn't outweigh the stew.
If you have to put Fritos in it, your chili probably sucks.
Yep.
Although I really like Frito pie.
I love Fritos in my chili, but I will eat my chili without Fritos in it.
Have you ever like made an old school Frito pie?
No.
It's a bag of Fritos. And you know the seam on the back of the bag of Fritos? Like, I mean, like one of the 60-cent, like personal, like the 1.5 ounce bags of Fritos. Uh-huh. You open that up across the back.
Yeah. Where you dump the chili in it and shake it up.
A ladle of chili and then a scoop of sour cream.
Yes, I've done that.
Yeah, it's awesome. That's awesome. It's awesome. It's like milk on your cereal. Like milk on your cereal, except 100 times better.
I was thinking like a chili, like graham cracker kind of buzzed up. And
No.
Like Fritos all buzzed up and like a crust. I'm like, nah, I've never done that.
that crappy little bags of Frito dish is called Frito pie. Actually, Nate, I got to run do an important piece of mise en place. I'll be right back.
All right.
This is my last cold beer I have to throw in the freezer.
All right.
I'll probably not edit this out because I feel like we're talking chili and this is honesty right here.
There you go.
Dude, I think the three-breasted hooker from Total Recall is going to be the official mascot of Hot Dogs and Caviar for the foreseeable future.
Dude, it's so awesome. I forgot how awesome that was.
That whole movie kicked ass. It was so weird, and parts of it were stupid, but even the stupid parts were awesome. It was like Road Warrior. It was like one of those movies where you're like, just turn your brain off and go.
Turn your brain off and go. Just like Homer in the Guatemalan Insanity Peppers. When he went on his vision quest and talked to the coyote.
like a lot of this doesn't make sense, but don't worry about it.
It's a chili eating contest. One alarm, two alarm. Wait a minute. What's the big idea?
Are we going to go to jail, Daddy?
We'll see, son. We'll see.
So that's my take on the whole non-canonical heretical ingredients in chili. Are you of a similar mind? Do you got anything going?
I dig it, but you know, I do take a little bit more of a modern day approach, more of a Betty Crocker approach, if you will. More of a, you know, regular kind of chili kind of guy. Chili con carne
with meat.
What, you got any secret ingredients you like to put in yours?
Well, that depends on what the chili's for. I think the biggest secret ingredient that I have is if I'm making chili for hot dogs, then I have my personal, and then I have the traditional secret ingredient. The traditional secret ingredient, and you'll know this very well, is cinnamon.
Nice. Yep.
Because the chili that's on a hot dog probably is very closely related to the chili that's on a trash plate.
A Rochester quality assortment?
A Rochester quality assortment. See Hot Dogs and Caviar episode 1.
Yes, the recipe's up there.
Warning, the technological production values of that one are even worse than the episode you're listening to right now.
The recipe's on the blog, though, and it makes a good hot dog chili.
Yeah, it makes a good hot dog chili. I feel like cinnamon is key. And also what that shows is that hot dog chili, or the chili for Chili Mac, like Midwestern / Northern, the Northern chili, the chili that runs from the upper Midwest through upstate New York, has not that much to do with Texas chili. It just kind of looks like Texas chili.
Right.
But what it really is, it's related to like the sauce from a Greek pastizio.
Onions, North African.
Onions, garlic, oregano, ground beef, tomato, cinnamon, red wine.
That whole cinnamon cumin kind of thing too, a little bit.
That's sort of like Asia Minor, the Eastern Mediterranean ragu. That is also chili. I think in America they probably ended up calling it chili because people were like, oh, that's chili. Americans looked at it and thought, that looks just like chili. That's chili. And that's where the chili dog came from.
Right.
Even though it's a tomatoey stew with beef as its primary ingredient, that's the only similarity between Rochester hot sauce and Texas chili con carne. There's a big, big gulf there where there's a lot of ingredients they don't share in common, but they're both chili because that's the word we use. There's nothing you can do about this. Now, my secret ingredient when I'm making hot dog chili is I don't do the cinnamon when it's for me, just because I like to drag it back in kind of a a southwestern direction. So my secret spice when I'm making hot dog chili is smoked paprika, pimentón de la Vera.
Uh-huh. That's, I always put that in there.
It just, it brings, it simulates cooking it on a wood fire.
Yep. I always add the pimentón de la Vera. I usually put the sweet and the hot in there if I have it.
Mm-hmm. Is it lazy?
A little bit of.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah, these are lazy man chili recipes here. So what I do too is I forget where I picked the trick up from, but I'll take my ground beef and I'll give it an alkaline treatment. So it's like water, salt, and baking soda. And what that does is it keeps the meat tender and moist by not allowing the proteins to bond too tightly. So it's a really good trick. All you got to do is like let it marinate for like 20 minutes and you don't remove it or anything. You just leave it right in there. Like Chinese cooks have been doing this for centuries with like egg whites. It's good for like stir fries and stuff. It affects the pH balance and it keeps the proteins from denaturing and bonding too tightly. That's a really good trick. It's good for a lot of stews and quick cooking and long cooking.
Well, that's keeps it more way juicy cooler and than moist and more ingredient.
Granular.
Huh? That's 100 times cooler than my secret ingredient.
Yeah, I'll put my basic chili recipe up on hotdogscaviarblogspot.com.
Never stop shilling. Never stop shilling.
But it's a pound of beef with the alkaline treatment. And then I put cumin, pimentón de la Vera, coriander, your favorite chili powder or whatever you like to use. I put dark cocoa powder in it to give it some depth. And then when I cook then with the onions and the garlic and a little oil, I always put a star anise pot in there. The way that the star anise and the onions react with the sulfites that we learned from Heston Blumenthal really accentuates like meatiness and roasted flavors. It's crazy, but it really works. Just one star anise pod. You pick it out at the end. I put tomatoes in mine, tomato paste. I always put in it.
I'm averse to tomato chunks in chili because chili was,
I like it smooth.
Chili was one of the dishes, one of the five dishes that my mom knew how to cook. And I say knew how to cook in big pink quotation marks. But when I was a child, that was one of my mom's go-tos. And her chili was always just stretched out with a huge can of like just chunked up tomatoes. And every time you bit down on a
sorry,
tomato,
Jesse's mom.
No, my mom, if my mom were here, I would tell her to her face, your cuisine is terrible. But the thing is, I should thank her because I learned to be a cook, just because I learned that food had, like, I grew up thinking that food was stupid and that only hamburgers were battered. And then all of a sudden I saw what ingredients could do. When I started working at a restaurant just so I could have beer money. And then once I saw people like making things that were good with ingredients, I was like, oh, cooking is actually kind of cool. And that wouldn't have had the same kind of impact if I hadn't been trained from a young age to think that cooking was stupid and terrible. So
yeah.
Thanks, parents. those huge chunks of tomato. And when you bit down a chunk of tomato, it was like watery and insipid compared to the rest of the chili. It was just like, why didn't you just puree this and let it sort of be dispersed throughout everything? Because like, you don't want to eat like a bunch of proteiny, meaty, spicy, delicious chili, and then all of a sudden get a mouthful that's just a cooked canned tomato. And not for me. So I like my tomatoes also in pureed form.
Yeah.
And always can't.
So, you know, like every other good dish, though, you know, every dish has fat, acid, and texture, right? So you got to add a little acid. You need to add a little fat. Like I add a little knob of butter at the end, just a little bit.
Any super stew.
I season with a, huh?
Any super stew.
Yeah.
It's never wrong.
It's never wrong. And then I season with red wine vinegar. I add soy sauce, Worcestershire, a splash of bourbon, scotch, or whiskey, whatever you got. That's basically it. I know a lot of people though have all their secret ingredients. I usually don't put beans in mine because I try to watch the carbs. I'm try to keep it low carb. I put cashews and almonds and different seeds, kind of like a salsa matcha kind of chili kind of thing. And I'll put a little scoop of almond butter in there. But I know people who put like you know, peanut butter or Dr. Pepper or Coca-Cola, or there's all kinds of secret ingredients. Like some people will put bananas or Parmesan, like you can go nuts with it, but.
What kind of meat do you use? Just ground beef?
Yeah, usually just ground chuck, just for the house. But you know, people have used short ribs and stuff like that. But
yeah, I've got
ground beef, man.
I've got two chili recipes, and like they're on either side of yours. One of them is significantly more hack and off the hip, and the other one is significantly more involved and annoying. And I'm still working on one of them. The other one I've perfected. The one I've perfected is the quick and dirty hot dog chili, which I've made for a staff meal at the Woodlands about a million times. And the great thing about it is that it can be thrown together in 10 minutes.
Yep.
And with it's like Polaroid chili. That is, I'll just rattle it off. Dice an onion, slice a couple cloves of garlic. Throw them in a pan with a little, like any kind of oil or butter. Sweat them till they get translucent. Then throw in like a pound and a half of ground beef once they're translucent, and just cook all that until the ground beef renders. So you got like beef and it's fat and you know, the onions and the garlic until the beef is basically cooked. Then depending on how fatty the ground beef was, if there's a ton of extra fat, pour it off. If there's only a little bit of extra fat, don't worry about it.
Yep.
Then take some Wondra, sprinkle the Wondra over all this. Wondra being par cooked wheat flour, sort of basically instant roux. So you cook, you toss the little Wondra in there, not a lot, not more than a tablespoon or two, just enough to cut the beef and kind of incorporate the fat. So you get this like beef glazed in fatty flour, and then add those little airline cans of tomato juice, one at a time, and then bring it to a boil. So the tomato juice catches and boils in the Wondra and it all starts to bind. So you have this like ground beef with onions and garlic glazed in beef fat and starch, and then you hydrolyze the starch with tomato juice. So you have this like until you get the sauce consistency that you want, and then take that and season it with salt, pepper, hot sauce, smoked paprika, and cumin, and you have 10 minute chili. Is it the best chili in the world? Absolutely not, but it's the best chili in the world that you can make in 10 minutes. And it's perfect if you're having chili burgers or baked potatoes or hot dogs.
Yeah.
Polaroid chili, like, because you don't have time to make a great pot of chili if you're just having chili dogs. If you're having chili for staff meal, if that's the draw, then you want to make a nice chili. You spend all day on it, but you're not really working on it all day. You're just kind of tending it while you do other stuff.
Yeah, it's not all active.
But if you need to punch out staff meal and you're like, shit, I don't really have time, all we have is hot dogs, how can I make it look like I didn't just pull this out of my ass? If you make some chili, people will think, oh, he made chili, that was nice of him, instead of hot dogs again, this guy's a fucking hack. So that's my amazing staff meal Polaroid chili. It's one of my best staff meal recipes. You've eaten it, I would say, probably conservatively 60 times.
Yep.
And you know what,
man?
It's not that bad.
Staff meal, international staff meal law. Line one, section one, rule one.
Fuck you, it's food. Food.
Yep.
Line two. Fuck you, it's free. But the other...
Get it while it's adequate.
Get it while it's staffs up. Get it while it's adequate. Oh, that was funny because it was totally true. The other chili that I've been working on, I have not perfected yet. But I wanted to get a sort of back to basics braised chili rather than a ground beef chili. Mm-hmm. So I really like going to the Mexican store and getting dried chilies. So I took some dried chilies and made like an adobo broth. So yes. Like, so onions and garlic always in adobo for me anyway, like a white, yep. Onion, a white onion and a few cloves of garlic. And you simmer those in a little water. And in that same water, you rehydrate some chilies. Now I do a blend of hot and mild. So like on the mild side, anchos are really good.
Yes.
Really, they have a really like robust
smoky
dusky flavor.
Yeah, that's what I like. I don't like them too hot.
They can be a little bitter, but you temper mm-hmm. them. Then a little bit hotter and a little bit less smoky, you have the guajillos. They're sort of, yes. They're about 3-4 inches long. They're sort of a brighter red. And you can toast them before you simmer them, but you got to be careful because they might get bitter. It's kind of an unnecessary step. So if you don't know what you're doing, maybe don't mess with it. But like anchos and guajillos for the base. And then for a little bit more heat, cascabels are really good. A cascabel chili, it means jingle bell chili, because when you rattle, they're like rattles. The seeds are inside and you can hear them rattling. That's a chili with a little bit of heat to it. And then like a little bit of a different flavor. And then for extra heat, maybe one or two arbol chilies, which are about the size of your pinky finger.
Those are hot.
They're hot as a $2 pistol. So you got to be careful. Uh-huh. So I would say maybe 3 anchos, 4 guajillos, 3 cascabels, and half an arbol would be
for how much meat?
That I couldn't tell you. I'm still working on this. This is a work in progress, and I'll
couple pounds, maybe like 2-3 pounds.
3 pounds at least.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
You take this and you make your adobo broth with like a head of garlic peeled, a half a head of garlic peeled, and an onion. And you could actually do the thing where you put the head of garlic in, like cut it in half, and just put the half a head in whole. The whole half head in. And then after simmering it, squeeze the cloves in. You don't need to spend time peeling it. And then you've got all these chilies and onions and garlic in this broth. And then you buzz it, and you have this like thick, medium thick broth. And then you can just add water or chicken stock if you have it, but water will work because this is all going to be stock by the end.
Right.
Add stock or water to it until it's not too viscous. It's just like, think about the consistency of heavy cream. It's not a sauce. It's a broth, but it's a broth with a bunch of pureed vegetables into it. And then after that, take bone-in short ribs and sear them. And then, because you want that caramelization, that's going to lend the flavor to the broth. Sear them and then put them into a pressure cooker with a chili broth. You don't have to do a pressure cooker, but it's faster.
A lot of people have Instapots now too.
Yeah, D swears by it. The thing is, guys, if you have an Instapot, you've got a pressure cooker. That's all it is.
Yep. So
everyone talks about the Instapot. An Instapot is a pressure cooker.
It's an electric pressure cooker, and they're awesome.
It's an electric pressure cooker with a sophisticated digital timer. They're really, really cool. It's a good tool.
Like, yeah.
As you know, of the two great fad cooking tools right now, the Instapot and the air fryer, the Instapot's the one you want to get if you actually want to make real food. The air fryer is the one you want to get if you're a fucked up that likes to lie to yourself.
I can't support those. I just can't get behind those goddamn things. Look like shit. Somebody gave us one, and I still won't even turn it on. I don't even want it.
Are they going to listen to this? Because you might want to. Hey, do I need to edit that?
I don't care. I think they're garbage, and you can quit me.
the air fryer is a directed convection device that doesn't actually fry anything, whereas the Instapot is just a brand name for a really good consumer pressure cooker.
Yep.
You know what? The last time I did this, my wife didn't have the Instapot yet, so I'm going to do my Instapot short rib chili. Look it up on hotdogsandcaviar.blogspot.com. I'm going to do this while it's chilly weather. This is going to happen maybe next week. Ooh, yeah. And then I'll make a rhubarb tart for dessert. Hell yes. I have some good stuff coming up for the blog next week.
Where'd you get rhubarb?
They've got it at the store. Specifically.
What store, dude? Harris. I love fresh rhubarb.
Harris Teeter, dude. The regular grocery store.
Must be the downtown one.
The Mount Pleasant one. My name is Nate and I live where it sucks.
I shop in Mount Pleasant because I'm fancy.
I am fancy. I'm a fancy princess.
You call me a princess all the time, you son of a bitch.
You suburban thug. Hey, I'm a princess. I'm not a son of a bitch. I'm the daughter of a queen. I got fairy wings and everything. For those of you who can't see at home, I'm ruffling my butterfly wings at Nate and adjusting my tiara coquettishly. they have rhubarb, and I'm going to make a lard crust rhubarb tart. And now that's going to be dessert after I make Instapot short rib chili. This is going to be a good couple of blog days.
That's going to be a banging dinner.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's all I'm trying out. I'm doing recipes from the Southern Cookbook. We'll see what happens, but I'm excited. But at any rate, cool. The short ribs and chili broth into an Instapot, and then cook it at pressure until the short ribs are completely hammered. Like falling apart until you can pick the bone out. Pick the bone right out to where you can just take a pair of tongs and just stick it in there and shake the tongs and the meat's just shredded. Then you can kind of go through and watch for any pieces of connective tissue that didn't break down, pick them out. So then you have chili broth, onions, garlic, all that with shredded beef. And then at that point, you don't need to add tomato. You can add beans if you want to. You can add tomato if you want to, but it's not necessary. What I would add to that, if it was mine, was just some oregano leaves stripped right off the stem. And then when you serve it, top it with a garnish of Brumoise white onion.
Hell yeah. Hey, a quick note on beans. I am not opposed to canned beans. They're fine. But just remember, all you know, novices out there, people who don't know, always rinse them off. There's a lot of like preservatives and different sodiums and shit like that. Yeah, rinse your beans, your canned beans.
Yeah, you'll wash off the fake taste. Canned beans are great. Like a lot of
canned
things,
beans are fine.
A lot of things
you just gotta rinse them.
Canned asparagus is for losers. Canned green beans are
canned
for losers.
Canned asparagus is one of the worst things in the universe.
Canned corn is for losers. Canned dry beans are okay.
Yeah, they're okay. Canned chickpeas, they're okay. Just rinse them.
What beans do you like in your chili, if you're gonna put beans in your chili? If
I like northern whites, I like kidneys, I like pinto.
I like a mix of kidney and pinto, it's cool. Also
black. I like the creamy white ones though, man. I think they're good.
I've never put white beans in a chili.
They're pretty good, man. Huh. I like they're really creamy. Gives it a little
cannellini
like mouthfeel. I like kidneys.
I said cannellinis.
Oh yeah, cannellinis. Yeah, perfect.
I like black beans in chili.
Hell yeah.
Black beans are great. Yep. I wouldn't go with anything smaller than a pinto bean. Like I feel like lentils have a flavor, and that flavor I associate so much with Mediterranean cuisine that it would be really strange in chili.
I mean, it could be good, but it's just not my thing.
Unless you were specifically making a Moroccan chili out of lamb. Ooh, mm-hmm. That might be cool. What if you replaced beef with lamb, kept all the chilies the same, and then did it with lentils instead of beans, and did like a lentil and lamb chili and flavor.
You need a little cinnamon in there, though, like your hot dog.
Yeah, flavor it with cinnamon and mint and lemon cumin. Rind and raw garlic and cumin. That'd be good.
Oh, man.
Would it be chili? Here's the question. Would it be chili?
I'd say so. Like,
I don't know. You ventured pretty far afield. I mean, there's almost no ingredients in common at that point.
Yeah. What would it be, though?
Lamb and lentil stew?
Yeah, probably. Whatever.
You could say it's a variation on the chili formula, kind of the same way that like the Commander's Palace cookbook observed that cassoulet is just red beans and rice without the rice, with white beans instead of red beans. And that is an interesting observation because it's totally true. Like it's beans cooked up with sausage and salt pork. But the difference is that in New Orleans, they use red beans and they serve it over rice. And in France, they use white beans and they serve it on its own. I was like,
yeah, but if you were to put it on the menu in Middle America and Midwest or something, and you called it Moroccan chili, like people would know what you meant.
People would know what you meant. Because, well, they would see the word Moroccan, which is so obviously not chili. Kind of the same way that like when I was in New Orleans, there was a big Louisiana population. I'm sorry. There was, of course, the big Louisiana population in New Orleans. Jesse's had a few beers. Let me start that over. Kind of like when I was in New Orleans, there was a big Vietnamese population. And of course, the go-to sandwich of New Orleans is the po' boy. And there were all these Vietnamese shops and they had banh mi's. And I didn't know, I had never encountered a banh mi. I didn't know that's what it was called. There, they were called Vietnamese po' boys. And it was just a banh mi. Like it was, you know, a couple of slices of pate and some ham and some carrot, a salad with fish sauce, and fried shallots, like exactly what you'd expect as a banh mi. But there they called it Vietnamese po' boys. Is it a po' boy? No. But in that context, it makes sense. It's kind of the same way if you said Moroccan chili, the word Moroccan takes someone's brain so far away from their expectations on chili that they would be willing to accept those changes. But if you just said lamb and lentil chili and brought that to a chili contest, or if you said lamb and lentil chili and served it on a Moroccan chili dog, you might run into some trouble.
You're like, not going to win.
It's one thing to bend paradigms. It's the other thing to completely change the rules of a dish and piss people off.
Yeah. And it's crazy how one word on a menu can change the sales and everything. It's crazy. Yeah,
exactly.
It's all perception. Anyways, that's all I got for chili. Yeah, man.
I'm good. I'm good on chili. Well, why don't we go ahead and wrap this one up? We'll make this one a quickie. And then look forward to, as soon as possible, we get back together with the great Tarver Super King King and find out
Super what King on an amazing.
I feel like this next episode, we're not going to get to say anything.
I don't want to say anything. No, I just want to listen.
Like, my main role is to like keep Tarver on task if he starts to drift, and then later on edit the episode. You don't have to do
anything.
I'm
just going to sit here with my mouth open, drooling. Yeah, you're
like,
awesome.
Like, I'm the producer and engineer, which means if he starts to go off into the stratosphere, I'm like, Tarver, we only have like 4 hours here. You got to reel it in. Whereas you could just sit there and soak it in, and Tarver's just going to tell us everything that happened.
I'll refer to my default mode when I'm around Tarver as the yippy little dog chasing around the big bulldog. Yeah, yeah. What are we going to do next, boss?
All right. Well, everyone look forward to that. I hope it's the next episode. If it's
we'll
not,
see.
We'll get it done as quick as we can. Soon. I told Tarver I'd get up at 4 a.m. if I had to. And we'll make this happen. So ideally,
I think he's a little busy over there.
Yeah, no, he has no time for us. But once he gets back, or maybe once he has some time, we'll do a special Hot Dogs and Caviar to find out what Tarver got up to.
UK edition.
Yeah, Tarver Hot Dogs and Caviar UK report. Tarver
Super King in the UK.
Super King, London correspondent, Tarver Super King King. It's going to be, I promise that's going to be a fun one. He's going to be ebullient, effervescent. He's going to be bursting at the seams to tell us everything that happened. He's going to say the word fuck every fifth word, like he's, because you know the more he gets excited the more he curses, like,
oh yeah,
like, and that he's gonna be so excited, it's just gonna be a stream of profanity, and occasionally he'll slip in the word of an ingredient. He'll be like, shit, piss, fuck, bullock and caviar, it's gonna be fantastic. So everyone look forward to the Tarver in London episode. It's coming soon. I can't say it's coming next time because it's sometimes hard to pin that dude down, but it's happening.
Bank it.
All right. Well, in that case, Nate, we done?
Yeah, sounds good. Hey, and on a quick note, thanks so much, everyone, for all the comments and questions. Keep them coming. We love it. We're going to try to answer. If you reach out to us, we will answer you in some way, shape, or form. Just keep them coming. We love hearing from you guys. And thank you.
Yeah, the only reason we didn't answer the reader questions that we had for this episode is that they were for Tarver, and he's not here. So
we get it, man. We get it.
He's cooler than us. We know.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, anyway, all this is exciting. All this is happening. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and we will see all of you next time for another fine episode of, or at least adequate, get it while it's adequate, another adequate episode of Hot Dogs and Caviar. Well, for Nate Spincake Whiting, I am the mouth of the South, Jesse Sutton. We will see all of you next time. Isn't that right, Mr. Dog?
Yes, sir. Go Bills.
Yeah, go Bills. And you know what? I've had enough of the whole NFL. Those overtime rules got to go.
My little darling, my little.